Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Fiona.
And this is our final exciting conception to production episode with a fantastic interview with Christian Kelly Madeira, who's co-creator, executive producer, director and supervising editor of The Once and Future Nerd. That must be a really big badge.
Yes. He has to wear. Sort of goes all the way across, a very, very wide lapel.
Can't get through doors, has to go sideways through the door.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
But yes, you had a fabulous interview with him.
Oh, yes. It was really fascinating to talk to Christian Kelly Madeira. He has lots of interesting things to say. So if you do have any feedback on this interview or other interviews or indeed anything now that summer is over and our season is over, where yes. can people email us, Sarah? Drum roll.
podcast at audiodramaproduction.com. Does that work?
Yeah.
No, maybe needs a bit of work.
It's on the way, isn't it?
You know? Okay, I'll keep going with that. but also for some amazing advice on how to podcast, what to do, where to look, and equipment, do go to thepodcasthost.com. They have a wide variety of exciting articles and things for you to delve into to fathom more about how to be a great podcaster.
And also, this is the end of the summer season, so... It's okay. Autumn is here.
Autumn season. Woo!
Yeah.
That's like nice, warm, hot toddies. That's, yeah, a bit of Jägermeister in the old tea.
Absolutely.
Is that what you do?
Yes, tea and toddies and all that. And so in 2 weeks' time, what are we doing then, Sarah?
Well, in 2 weeks' time, we are resuming with some exciting adventures in podcasting, looking at the Austin Film Festival,
yes.
which happens in Austin, which is a very cool place to be, and the opportunities, oh my goodness, for writers and just general creatives to be in such an all-consuming but creative and productive place looks amazing. If I lived nearby, I would be there.
Yeah.
And
the title... does say film, but it does actually also include audio drama.
Those of you that have been patrons of ours have heard the concise version of the interview. So those of you that haven't are now able to join in with our privileged view. And thank you so much to everybody who does patron our show. We are very, very grateful to you. It means that we can, you know, host it where we do and get done all of the bits and bobs, the roving for interviews and a few bits and pieces that we hopefully providing a decent service for you podcasting freaks out there.
Absolutely.
And we're enjoying ourselves immensely, aren't we?
Oh, totally.
Are you having
yes.
fun?
Yes.
Good. So without further ado, maybe more fun to be had listening to the interview that Fiona had with Christian.
Hooray.
Enjoy.
I'm absolutely delighted today to introduce Christian Kelly Madeira, who is the co-creator, executive producer, director and supervising editor of The Once and Future Nerd. Hello.
Hi, Fiona. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, not at all. Thanks for being here. First of all, do you want to just sort of introduce a little bit about who you are and what you do for anyone who hasn't listened to The Once and Future Nerd yet?
Sure. So The Once and Future Nerd is a serialized epic fantasy audio drama, and it's about three high school kids from present-day Pennsylvania who end up in a kind of sort of gritty high fantasy world that's embroiled in civil war, and it's a little bit of... we try to incorporate some kind of genre-aware humor into the whole thing. If you've ever seen the film Cabin in the Woods, that's kind of a touchstone for us of kind of the tone we want to achieve, where it's hopefully a successful instance of the genre while also being a little bit of a satire on the genre.
Definitely. I love it. I really do. I think it's just great language.
Well, thank you, Fiona.
And how did you come up with this? Where did this show kind of begin?
Well, so this, I think when I got Skyrim, whatever Christmas that came out, and I just really fell down that rabbit hole. Like, I was playing far too much Skyrim, missed a couple meals, just it got bad. But in the middle of that binge, there's a quest in Skyrim where a guy in some little town is putting together, he wants to put together a museum of the cataclysmic event that almost ended the world in the previous Elder Scrolls game. Mm-hmm. And so he has you know, go retrieve the dagger of the deity who almost ended the world in Elder Scrolls 4, mm-hmm. supposedly for his museum. And you bring it back to him, and he says, great, okay, now we're going to go up on a mountain and summon this deity. And one of the dialogue options is, I believe the exact quote is, "That sounds like a terrible idea." And when I read that, I laughed so hard because it occurred to me that people are rarely petty in fantasy in the mm-hmm. way that human beings usually are. You know, you see evil represented, you see good represented, and, you know, with modern fantasy, you see much more in between represented, but they still all talk like they're in Beowulf. And I just really like the idea of fantasy heroes being petty and reluctant and realistic and not wanting to go on the adventure because it sounds like a terrible idea. So I started brainstorming, like, okay, if I was going to have characters who were, like, who would be the most prone to dragging their feet about a fantasy adventure? And the answer that pretty quickly presented itself was teenagers. Uh-huh. So then I called my friend Zach, my best friend from college, who is reads a lot more fantasy than I do. I mean, I've become a bigger fantasy fan since starting the show, but I was fairly casual before kind of Skyrim. But Zach has read a ton, and I knew that in order for the comedy to work, I didn't want it to be farce. I wanted the world to feel real and lived in, and like it functioned without our characters being there. And I knew that I do not have the patience or the mind for the kind of in-depth world building that requires.
Right.
But that Zach loves that stuff. So I went to him and said, "Hey, I have this idea. I need your help, you know, building a world and a magic system. Are you interested?" And I think his answer was something along the lines of, "Like, I think I've been waiting my whole life for you to send me this message." So we went from there. And we initially wrote it as a television pilot, just because that was, mm-hmm. I mean, that's what my training is in. You know, I'm trained to write for the screen. In my day job, I work in film and television in post-production. And so we wrote a television pilot. We took a look at it after we were done, realized the pilot would cost probably about $10 million to make, and that there was nobody who was kind of tripping over themselves to give $10 million to two people with no writing credits. But we were already too in love with the idea to abandon it. So we kind of stumbled kind of ass backwards into the idea of audio drama, foolishly not realizing that it was obviously already a thing that lots of people had been doing, and maybe we should see what other people were doing and try to, you know, learn from them. But we've, of course, you know, since then come to know this incredible community. But so at the time, it was kind of, at the beginning, was very clumsily retrofitting an audio format to a television pilot. And since then, we've kind of more fully embraced the medium, I think.
Right. That's fascinating, though, that you actually, had you had any experience at all in radio or in audio? Or you just sort of self-taught, were you, in that sense?
I mean, I was a DJ in college, but that's it.
Right.
And, like, I knew, you know, some very basic audio editing techniques from my film training, but nothing in depth. And I kind of figured, you know, it sounds pretty stupid when you say it out loud, but it was like, you know, writing is writing and editing is editing and all that stuff, which to some extent is true. But I guess I kind of foolishly figured, like, well, it's, you know, it's just audio, so it's one less thing to worry about, so it'll be easy, right? Which is kind of like saying, hey, you know, running a marathon with no arms should be easier because it's two fewer limbs to worry about. And it's like, well, no, you're not having anything but audio kind of changes the way you have to approach it, which is what I hope that we've learned well as we've gone along.
And did you make a lot of changes to that primary TV pilot, or did you just kind of start from scratch again with the same characters, the same world, and so on for radio, for audio?
Yeah, we didn't start from scratch. We basically we kept all the dialogue as it was, and then we basically added narration and sound effects where necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tweaking the dialogue a little when it didn't make sense. And I think one of the smart things, if I can say so, that we did early on was to realize that if we're going to have a narrator, the narrator has to be a character themselves. It shouldn't just be the rote recitation of plot information. This should be somebody who has a sense of, you know, they have a personality, and they have, even if they're trustworthy, they have certain goals and desires of their own, like any person would. And so the idea of the wood sprite, who's a little bit snarky and who has opinions about what should be happening in this world, that unlocked a lot for us. But in the beginning, I still think that we kind of relied a little too heavily on narration because we were nervous. We didn't know what we would be able to achieve with sound effects. And now that we've kind of got our bearings a little bit, we do lean on the sound effects more while still keeping the narrator there for kind of tone and flavor and for things that need to be verbally explained. But I think we've dialed in that balance a little better about what's going to be done with narration and what's going to be done with sound effects only.
Sure, sure. Yeah, no, that's understandable, isn't it, for, you know, when you're starting out, definitely. And when you're working with actors, do you do all of your recording remotely, or do you have a studio that you work in?
We do work in a studio. We hire the extremely talented Jared Paul, who's also the production engineer for Wolf 359.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and his studio sounds incredible, and he's a great guy to work with. The goal is always to have everybody in a room together.
Mm-hmm.
It almost never works out that way. We have a cast of, I think, of 11 now, and they're all, you know, either professional actors or they have other day jobs, and they're all still volunteering their time for this show. So scheduling, it rarely works out that everybody's free on the same day at the same time, but we try to have as many people in a room together as we can, and I'm always there in a room with them. So it's mostly local recording with a little bit of the aspect of remote.
Sure. And how much interaction and preparation do you give the actors before you start work on the script?
Well, we always do we do a rehearsal, which is, you know, basically a table read, and then we talk about the script, and you know, we try to really nail down the tough parts in that rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, we do a couple takes in the studio, and when something's not quite working, we'll usually take a little time and find it then. You know, and at this point, we've been doing it for 3 or 4 years now, and some of the actors have been there since the absolute beginning, and they know their characters at least as well as I do at this point. So if I haven't quite nailed something down in the writing, the actors will usually figure it out in the studio or in the rehearsal as I'm coaching. I mean, for example, I find that we end up, Julie ends up ad-libbing a lot of Jen's dialogue.
Cool.
Or with the same intention, but just changing the verbiage a little bit, because shockingly, Julie has a better mastery of the speech patterns of a millennial woman than I do. So.
That's great. That's great that you're not kind of precious over your writing, or, you know, you're willing to be a bit flexible with.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to be. I mean, I'll tell them when, like, you know, hey, you pronounced this Elvish word wrong, or no, you need to hit this word in this sentence because that's, you know, foreshadowing such and such. But I think it's really, I mean, that's part of the fun of working with actors is they'll. Mm-hmm. They'll find things that you didn't think of while you were writing. And especially now that several of our actors are also writing the show, I'm very happy to let people, you know, find something that I didn't think of. I think that's important. And it also is important to make actors feel like they're steering the ship somewhat, you know, that they have some, they're not just coming in to, you know, recite your words, that they're a creative participant in the process.
That's very cool. And coming onto your website, now I don't want to start off a competition here, but I have to say, of all the audio drama websites I've gone to, yours is by far, it's the most comprehensive website. It is amazing. It comes with episodes, you've got the plot, you have the scripts, you have warnings about certain aspects of some of the scripts and some of the plots. You have your art. I mean, it's just wonderfully laid out. How did you come up with all of that? How did you even approach this kind of... it looks very professional indeed.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think the original genesis of the idea was when we started and kind of had no idea what we were doing. Like, we didn't know what is the eventual... Obviously, we always wanted to monetize to some extent. You know, we hoped to, at the very least, recoup our production costs and hopefully, you know, pay the actors eventually. Uh-huh. But we had no idea. I think when we launched, Patreon was not a thing yet.
Right.
So we had no idea what the path to monetization was and kind of... And knew we didn't want to put the show behind a paywall because, you know... It was hard enough to get people to find it when it was free, you know. So we figured that the only path to monetization at that point was going to be ad sales on the website. So we wanted to drive as much traffic to the website as possible. So that was why we put the episode guides and the plot and all that stuff up there. We had originally had a plan that, like, the discussion forum would only go on the website, and that the bonus content that we put out would only go on the website to try and drive web traffic. But we eventually realized that, like, no, in audio drama podcasting, you just got to get your audio out there to whoever wants to listen to it. And, I mean, that coupled with the advent of Patreon meant there were other ways to monetize. But I think we've always... We've never really lost that initial idea that the website, you know, could be like a central hub for the show.
Uh-huh.
And obviously on the discussion section of the website, we link to, we link to where the discussions are actually happening, which tend to be on, you know, Reddit and Tumblr and Discord and Slack, which is where audio drama fans tend to congregate. And the scripts were a fairly recent addition. Initially, that was a reward for Patreon subscribers to get the scripts. And then we started to see a bunch of chatter online, not directed at us, just in general, that I found very persuasive, that there are a lot of people, you know, who for various reasons related to, you know, disability or other things, basically need a transcript in order to, take advantage of the show.
Right.
And our original policy was like, hey, it's a reward for the patrons. If you need the transcript because of disability, you can reach out and ask us and we'll, you know, believe you and send it to you, no questions asked. But then the counter to that was like, well, there are probably some people who maybe don't want to, you know, volunteer their disability status to strangers over the internet. So, which I found that persuasive too. So we eventually decided, okay, we're going to post the scripts on the website. We checked in with the patrons and we said, hey, if we did this, would you be cool with it? And in exchange, we'll give you our episodes the night before they're released to the public. Uh-huh. And all of our patrons, everybody who responded was super cool with it. So we cool. just posted the scripts. And I should clarify that what we post are they're not proper transcripts where somebody sits down and transcribes the episode after the fact, because, you know, I would love to be able to do that, but we absolutely do not have the resources for that at the time. But our scripts are written in such a way that they're pretty good representations of the final product, that, you know, someone would be able to follow along, and that they tend not to reveal too much beyond what is supposed to be revealed. So for us personally, and I know it's not the case for every show, we were okay to just post our scripts and basically use that as the official transcript.
Cool. It's a lovely idea, actually, and I hadn't thought of that, of sort of improving accessibility to listeners who might need that. That's great.
Yeah. And I mean, similarly with the content notes that we do, you know, I kind of think of it, people get real antsy when the term trigger warning comes up. But I mean, the way I just think of it is, like, you know, listen, I like spicy food, right? And uh-huh. Like when I cook food, I make it spicy. I think that food is more enjoyable when it is spicy. And I think if someone hasn't tried spicy food, they should maybe give it a shot and try to see if that discomfort doesn't open you know, their kind of culinary experience up that way. And in the same way, I think that, you know, all good drama is going to make someone uncomfortable at some point.
Of
but
course.
At the same time, making spicy food is not, like, saying that food is better when it is spicy is not the same as saying food should cause anaphylactic shock.
Yeah.
Which is why that, you know, most restaurants will just do their customers the courtesy of listing common allergens on the menu. So, because there's a difference between, like, you know, pad thai is great. I love pad thai. But if you're allergic to peanuts and shellfish, like, you're not, no matter how much I tell you, no, pad thai will make your dining experience better, you're not going to enjoy it if you're choking on your own tongue. So for me, the content notes are just a way to say, hey, here's a heads up about what sort of might be in this episode. We trust you to use your judgment of whether you want to kind of push through some discomfort and listen to the show, or whether you need to take care of your own mental health. And it's just a matter of, you know, trusting our fans to make that decision for themselves.
Cool. And like you say, they are very sort of, they're not really spoilery as such, but they are that kind of, yeah, warning.
Yeah, we try. That's honestly the most delicate dance, is trying to, like, okay, how do we make this specific enough to be useful, but not so specific as to spoil the show? And so what we try to do is we put it, you know, below a bunch of hard carriage returns, so that you can avoid scrolling to it if you don't want to. And we try to be as vague as possible while still being, you know, useful for its intended purpose.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah, no, I think you do. I think that's a really great thing to do, actually. I think it's nice. To ask, actually, you mentioned there about social media, and like you say, you've got your links on the website to the discussions that are going on in Reddit and Slack and Discord and TV Tropes. Do you get quite a lot of feedback on social media, and do you listen? Are you tempted to listen to what your listeners are saying and to kind of incorporate anything into future stories based on what they're hoping might happen?
So, you know, getting, like, consistent feedback is a fairly new thing to us. Like, we had gotten little trickles here and there before, but it was only in the last, you know, kind of just as we were ramping up to our second season, we put ourselves on Tumblr and started engaging with the audio drama fandom that already exists there. And that was kind of a watershed for us in terms of fan interaction, because now we pretty reliably have some sort of fan feedback from Tumblr. And a lot of the fan feedback fills over into the Discord, which is the one place I stay off of, so that the fans feel like they have a place they can talk that I'm not, you know,
right.
Monitoring.
Yeah.
It's been great to see. It's like, it's such a compliment when people are engaged with your content in that way. And it makes all of us feel so good to know that it is out there. You know, there's always a temptation to read everything,
yeah.
But I try to. I make a blanket policy of not reading any fan fiction, as tempting as it can be, just because, like, you know, internally consistent, you know, psychologically motivated plots and characters tend towards certain directions. So there's a very high possibility that a clever enough fan fiction writer would write themselves into something we were planning to do anyway.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to create the scenario where someone, where there's any possibility of someone feeling like we ripped off their idea.
Sure.
Which is why I steer clear of any kind of fan fiction. Now, I see some jokes that people post of like, oh, Billy should learn to play the bagpipes, or it's just like silly things like that. And I can't avoid reading those. And I might every once in a while throw in like a little fan service joke like that. But I, you know, that's the type of thing that I don't think anyone would feel like, oh, you ripped me off, you know.
Yeah.
But yes, that's my answer. I love that it exists. I read the feedback like, you know, this is a good episode. I liked that this happened. I didn't like that this happened. But I don't read fan fiction.
Mm. I think some podcast producers would love to have that kind of energized fan base. Did you do anything specifically to energize them and to get them talking about it, or did it just sort of happen organically as the series went on?
Yeah, I mean, we were, like I said, it was growing organically but very slowly on, you know, Facebook and Twitter and Reddit. But really when it blew up was when we got on Tumblr. And I don't know if we're just like, you know, we're a kind of Tumblr-y show in the sense that we, you know, our main characters are teenagers. We deal with like a lot of social issues in the show. So I think that's part of it. And I don't know, for whatever reason, I just feel like I get Tumblr a little better than I get a lot of other social media. Like I kind of figured out the etiquette and internal logic of it a little quicker than I figured out. Like I still am not quite sure how to use Twitter and Facebook to the maximum effect.
Sure.
But so I was like very aggressive in just engaging with the audio drama community when I first got on Tumblr. And I, anytime, you know, every once in a while out of the blue, somebody would say something about the show and tag us in it. And then I would, you know, always reblog that person and say, hey, look at this awesome person who obviously has great tastes in podcasts. If you like our show, you should talk to them. And so people started to connect that way. And now we are just about at the level of critical mass where a discussion can kind of proceed without our initiating it.
Fantastic.
Which is great. Yeah, and like you said, when you say a lot of podcasters would love to be in that position, I was certainly one of them for a very, very, very long time. Like this is an awesome development and feels like kind of a milestone for us.
Cool. And more generally, now that you've got this far with it, and like you say, when you started out, you'd originally done it for a different medium. What top tips do you have for producers wanting to do this themselves? This whole summer series is all about conception to production. So if there's someone out there with a seed of an idea, what would you recommend?
Sure. Well, they should, they have an advantage now that we didn't, in that not only are they hopefully aware of this big audio drama community by the fact that they're listening to this show, but there's so much stuff out there right now, and so much of it is extremely good. And so I would say just, you know, listen to shows that you really enjoy. See what they do that works really well for you. See what maybe they do that doesn't work, that you would like to try something differently. And use that. You know, let that be your guide in how you structure your show. And so that's my advice in terms of, like, you know, narration, how to use it creatively, and any other types of creative choices you're going to make. My other advice is that it's a lot of work that is going to feel very, very thankless for a long time. So make sure you are making a show that you believe in, that you enjoy making, and that your enthusiasm for the project is going to propel you through, you know, however, for a while, because for a long while, that's going to be all you have.
Wonderful. Thank you. And finally, where can people find your work? And also, do you have any extra news that you want to promote about your show? About the Once and Future Nerd?
Yeah, people can find us at onceinfuturenerd.com, or you can search Once and Future Nerd. Most places that you get podcasts, we're on iTunes, Google Play, what's the other one? Stitcher. You know, we are at _TOAFN on Twitter. We're Once and Future Nerd on Tumblr, Once and Future Nerd on Facebook. r/onceandfuturenerd is our subreddit. If you Google Once and Future Nerd, you'll find us.
Well, can I just say it has been an absolute honor to chat to you. Please, if you haven't checked out the Once and Future Nerd, it really is just brilliantly done. It's very funny, and it's very gripping as well as a story. So please do. Thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it.
Fiona, thank you so much for having me on. Thank you for the kind words about the show. You and Sarah are doing a great job with the Audio Drama Production podcast. And I really appreciate you having me on. I'm going to go run and turn on my refrigerator now.
Fantastic. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.